Thanks for listening to the best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
I think we should do a topic that nobody has done before on sports radio. Are you ready for this, Brady?
Yeah, let's do it.
Are the Warriors better without Kevin Durant? I am so sick of that crap, man. Come on, let's start churning out some oldies. If we're gonna do that, like let's go into the Mount Rushmore conversation. Let's start making lists. Greatest two guards of all time. Come on, man, with that tired crap. They're not better without Kevin Durant. Enough is enough. But they will be without Kevin Durant, as it was made official. Kevin Durant will not be available for Game 1 of the NBA Finals coming up Thursday in Toronto. Not even traveling for the team, so most likely not even available for Game 2. So now we've got the Kevin Durant saga and storyline in his absence going into the NBA Finals for at least a game, according to head coach Steve Kerr. So
why do we complicate these sorts of discussions anyway?
I don't know, man.
Let's just for a second. We're all using the stat of what they've won. They've only lost one game this season when Curry's played and Durant hasn't. Isn't that the stat's been thrown around? It's like they're like 32-1. Or
yeah, it's an incredible record. I get it.
Yeah, it's great, great. So I understand it from that standpoint. Let's look at it though from like the opponent's standpoint. Who do you think is easier to prepare for? Do you think a Warriors team without Kevin Durant is scaring teams as much as a Warriors team with Kevin Durant? I mean, isn't that the whole narrative? Once Kevin Durant joined the Golden State Warriors, were people in up in arms who are fans of the NBA or around the NBA saying this shouldn't be able to happen? They're too good. They're too powerful now. I mean, so if that's the argument, then what's changed now?
Right.
How has that changed now? Just because you've got a small sample size? And now all of a sudden you think they're better without him, which we're going to get the chance probably to see after the season because he's probably going to leave in free agency. But that's for another time, another place. I don't get how all of a sudden that narrative has flipped just because you have a small sample size. Ask the opponents if they're not happy that Kevin Durant's not playing in Game 1 or Game 2.
It's, you know, a lot of this just goes back to bitterness. People are just never going to forgive him for making the decision that he made. LeBron dealt with this. You're in South Florida. LeBron dealt with this crap going to the Heat after he left. People were, no matter what he does for the rest of his career, there's still some people who will never forgive him for the way that he, and you being a Cleveland guy, you know how Cleveland felt after he left. People will just never forgive him. Now, going back to Cleveland, winning that title kind of absolves him from a lot of that stuff and a lot of the crap he's going to have to hear from people. But Kevin Durant's going to get heat for the rest of his career, and this conversation's going to continue. I actually think him not playing in the series is probably better and makes the series more interesting. I really, because with Kevin Durant, I don't think Toronto has a shot. I don't think they have any shot whatsoever. Without Kevin Durant, I think it makes it a more interesting series, and you do have that storyline that's attached to it.
It's fair. I mean, I'll tell you this much. I actually like watching Golden State without Kevin Durant. It feels like there's more ball movement. It's not as much isolation basketball when Kevin Durant's there. It's hard for me to say that, though, too, because I do love seeing the best in the game play. It would be fun to see Kevin Durant being guarded by Kawhi Leonard and how those two are going to square off versus one another. So we're not treated with that, at least not as it seems right now in Game 1 or Game 2. But at some point, the narrative can follow him wherever it wants. I don't know that it's ultimately going to matter, though. What are we holding? Like, that narrative, whether it was following LeBron or not, like, what standard are we holding them up to? Michael Jordan? These guys aren't going to be able to get close to that. And so I guess a year from now, 2 years from now, especially as fast as news cycles go, I don't know why we think, like, this is going to be the narrative. I just said, you know, a couple minutes ago, the narrative about Kevin Durant going to the Warriors in the first place, everyone had an issue with because they were going to be too good. And now they're saying they're better without him. And that changed in the past couple of years. So I think the narrative could stick maybe for now. it's not going to in the future in a year or two. You know, maybe if they're looking back on the legacy of Kevin Durant and he ever gets close to Michael Jordan, but that's for another time and place. Yeah. I'm not into the whole list of greatest all times and all that anyway. It's too hard to compare different eras.
He's in a real sort of a tough spot this year, just based on if the Warriors win a couple of games without him and he comes back and then they go on to win the NBA Finals, this is going to be looked at as the team that did it, the bulk of it, without Kevin Durant. And then if he doesn't come back and the Warriors still win the NBA Finals, they're going to be looked at as, well, yeah, they did it without Kevin Durant. They didn't need him to begin with. And God forbid he does come back and they lose the NBA Finals, he's going to get the blame for it. This guy can't go anywhere. Like, he is screwed.
And then there's obviously the other scenario. He, if they weren't able to make it or they weren't able to win it because he wasn't there, then he doesn't get a chance or a piece of any title. You know, so it's he literally can't, no matter how you dice it up, he cannot win. He cannot win in this scenario. And it's unfortunate that we've scrutinized his career, the decisions he's made to that point.
I feel bad for the guy. I really do.
But I feel like he's playing some of his best basketball.
Of course.
I mean, it's like he's at a prime point in his career, and all we can do is, instead of appreciate, is nitpick and try to knock him down a peg of what he isn't. And that's one of the toughest things, I think, right now. Even in the conversation about LeBron and his legacy and his career, is we were always trying to compare him to Jordan. We were always trying to compare him to the greatest of all time. And I think it's a compliment in itself. But at the same time, it makes it hard then for you to appreciate these guys in their prime or while they're still playing. And you know, again, I think Durant's still in that prime, and he will be for a period of time. But no matter what happens, he loses this postseason. And that's unfair.
If they were to win a title this year, do you think he ever wears this championship ring out in public?
Can I be honest?
I wouldn't.
No. As a player, I would not. I would not. I just, it wouldn't feel genuine. It wouldn't feel like I was really a part of it, even though you were a part of the team building to that point. Now, I would never tell anyone that publicly, but the truth is, I feel like a lot of players wouldn't feel great about doing that. In fact, I knew a player who, you know, remember that Ohio State scandal that went on where they were trading stuff for tattoos and all that? One of the players had given away one of their rings. And I can't remember if it was a national championship ring or like a Big Ten title ring. But I remember hearing a story about the player saying, well, I didn't really play, so it didn't really have much significance to me. So I'd rather get a tattoo that does instead of carry around this ring where I didn't play and I got it just because I was on the team. So I think there's a lot of players who would fall into that category. But most probably wouldn't trade it for a tattoo. And then most likely wouldn't say that publicly.
Yeah, I am overly sensitive to having to earn it. I have to earn it. If I don't earn it, I don't want it. And I can remember playing high school football and I was terrible and I never played, that they would give food after the game. Like, there'd be burgers or hot dogs after the game for the team. If it was a road trip, they'd make sandwiches. I would never eat because I just thought, well, I didn't play, so I don't want the cheeseburger that's been sitting over next to the little kid's vomit because his parents gave him too much candy because they were bored at a football game. I don't want it. I didn't earn it. I don't want it. And I think Kevin Durant probably looks at it similarly, to where he just kind of says, I can't claim this. This isn't mine. The last two were. He has every right to claim. He was the best player in both those NBA finals. So it's why I say it. I just, at some point, I wonder if it's even worth coming back. And we can touch on that later on. But is it even worth coming back this year? What is it going to do for him? I mean, you're going to risk injury. You're going to run the risk that you end up getting hurt. You're in a contract year. You're clearly not going to be 100%. At some point, he's got to have that conversation, I think.
No, I think it's a valid conversation. But I also think you have to ask yourself, you know, initially, didn't we think he was going to come back sooner? I mean, do you have a theory? I mean, do you have any sort of theory on why you feel like he's not able to come back for game one or game two of the finals?
Now, I'm gonna let you make the call here. All right, this is what a good human being I am. I'm going to let you make the call, Brady Quinn. I can either drop that conspiracy theory on your lap right now, or I can set that conspiracy theory right on your lap after we hear from Eddie Garcia. Which way do you want it? How you want it, dog? Come on, which way do you want it?
I would love the lap dance option, which, whichever one you just put out there. The lap dance option sounds better.
All right, so you pressed me up against the wall. You wanted me to drop the hammer on this conspiracy theory I have on Kevin Durant. Here's my conspiracy theory, Brady Quinn. Are you ready for it?
Yeah, let's hear it.
No, seriously, I want to. Are you ready? Okay.
I think I'm ready.
All right.
Yeah.
I think Kevin Durant re-aggravated the injury when he was posing for those Instagram pictures that he sent out after they beat the Rockets at one game. Because he... Hold on. Don't laugh me off the stage yet. There's more here, okay? I've got more material than this. Please don't laugh me off the stage yet. All right. I think that something happened because Kevin Durant alluded to it. And look, we'd love to play the audio, but here's the thing about playing audio during shoot-around at an NBA game. You can't hear anything, all right? So if people are driving around, all you hear is a ball bouncing in the background, which gets me excited, but that's a whole conversation for another day. So Kevin Durant alluded to it on Friday when he said, you know, I pushed it a little too hard or kind of learned my lesson, you know, celebrating. Maybe I can't do that because I find it a little bit coincidental that the Warriors went from we're really relieved. It's just a mild calf strain. We fear the worst, but it's not even close. To all of a sudden, after they beat the Rockets, yeah, it's a little more serious than we initially thought. I think he re-aggravated it, celebrating that Rockets win and the pictures that were posted. How's that?
Look, it wouldn't be the first time someone injured themselves for the gram, okay? And it wouldn't be the first time that we've seen players injure themselves while getting ready to celebrate or celebrating, right? It's hard to subscribe to that theory, though, only because when the initial injury happened, I think it was as serious or it looked about as bad as we all thought. And I think knowing what's coming this offseason for him in particular, he probably wanted to be more hesitant to come back and rush it and have something else because much like we just talked about a minute ago, they're more than likely going to win the series whether he's playing or not. And so if that's the case, this is more about his future. And when you start talking about the future of an NBA basketball player, and we don't know what that injury exactly is, but I would be very, very cautious moving forward with any sort of ankle, lower extremity injury like that. So as much as I want to co-sign on this, I can't see that being the case. I think there was a little bit of a damage and cover-up right after the injury where they wanted to make it seem like it wasn't as bad as it looked, especially when you saw a player have that sort of reaction where he looks back like someone shot him. And in this case, I think he reacted in a legitimate way where something was seriously wrong. Usually we attribute that to a torn Achilles. They haven't said that, but if that is the case, obviously it's incredibly unfortunate, even though maybe he still comes back this series. Maybe I'm wrong, but I just think there's too much weighing on the future of his NBA career to make a difference right now.
Now, if it comes out after the fact that my conspiracy theory was correct and Kevin Durant re-aggravated the injury celebrating the Warriors win, what sort of apology are you going to give me on the air? That's really what I want to know.
Okay, right. So here's what I'm going to do.
All right,
I'm going to ask Clay Travis.
Okay,
if you and I can host a show again together during this time slot,
all right,
and I'm going to ask him, and I'm going to say, okay, on May 32nd in the fourth hour,
okay,
can I publicly apologize to Jonas Knox if indeed the truth comes out by that point in time? We can pick a later date, okay?
Yeah.
It could be July 33rd or whenever you want. But in the fourth hour of the show, I will make my public apology then.
You're a giant pain in the ass. Let me tell you something. Everybody driving into work right now that's miserable coming back from a long weekend, having to go back into the office or wherever you call work. All right, you want to know what miserable is? Finding out I got to work another day with Brady Quinn, and I just had him on Sunday. This guy's not a pain in the ass. He's the pain in my ass. Every week I get this kind of abuse.
That can be interpreted not stand. The wrong way.
It could really be interpreted the wrong way. And let me tell you something. As this show continues on, we are already starting to teeter back into old form, and something tells me that that joke will be revisited and it'll have a different ending at the end of the show, I think.
I'm sure we'll have a different ending, hypothetically.
Shout out to Bob Kraft.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
We're going to talk about fun stuff, like another conspiracy theory, Brady Quinn. I had my conspiracy. I think Kevin Durant re-aggravated the injury celebrating in those Instagram posts when he jumped up and down, allegedly, after the Warriors took care of the Rockets. I think he re-injured the calf there, and that's why he's still out. Okay, so that was my conspiracy theory. You laughed me off stage with that one. But you, sir, have a conspiracy theory regarding his teammate, Klay Thompson. And when we do conspiracy theories, we strike up the band.
That's right.
So let's go.
So look, everyone is making a big deal about Klay Thompson not being on an all-NBA team. And obviously it impacts his wallet more than anything else. I think that's probably the most frustrating thing for me, watching the fact that based on how the media votes, it could ultimately directly affect his level of play, pay. And so there was a narrative, you know, when Kevin Durant joined the Golden State Warriors, that people were starting to get fatigued and tired of these super teams, right? They're tired of all these stars joining forces and being able to have the ability to do that and kind of getting around it by paying the luxury tax, maybe some guys taking some more team-friendly deals. But either way, you know, it doesn't seem like the NBA wants to break up these teams or not allow them to form and then have a run like we've seen from the Golden State Warriors going to five straight NBA finals. And so I think the media may have taken it into their own hands. How do you go about doing that? You hit a player where it hurts the most, not the groin. That's just a little bit on the other side, the wallet. All right. You hit him right where it hurts in the wallet. And if you can find a way of manipulating or keeping him from being able to earn a huge contract because he's not on an all-NBA team, you're basically sending the message that if Klay Thompson wants to be viewed as a top player, the top player at his position in the NBA, he's going to have to go somewhere else besides Golden State because he gets outshined by guys like Steph Curry or Kevin Durant. And so they're basically putting their foot down. They're voting and they're just saying, we're just not going to put him on there. We know it infects him from a financial standpoint. Go somewhere else, be a star there, and maybe it'll change our minds.
I love it. And listen, it's exactly why media shouldn't be allowed to vote for certain things. You see them play favorites. You see them hold grudges. We've seen it before. Baseball Hall of Fame is a perfect example. Guys that refuse to vote somebody in their first try because so-and-so wasn't a unanimous. So why should they be? What? Like that sort of logic doesn't make any sense, but media and people in the media have agendas. It's always bothered me, and the fact that an agenda could cost a guy $30 to $80 million, whatever the case may be, in the NBA just based on not making an all-NBA team, I think is crap. And I think players should now be allowed to vote for what media members get bonus-wise. That's what I think.
Isn't it funny when you turn something around like that, and then people go, oh, well that's not fair? We go like, oh, wait, it's fair one way, but not the other? It never makes any sense to me when all of a sudden you turn around the argument and you're like, no, that's what fairness is. That means it works both ways. It's fair for both parties. And I know no one's going to cry about Klay Thompson not getting an additional $80 million, I think is what the Supermax would have been, or $30 million to the other tier. But, you know, again, it's still a ton of money. And if you were in his shoes, you'd probably be frustrated by it, too. So no one's crying for him. But still, I think he's a solid player. Maybe he'll have to go somewhere else ultimately to prove it, which is sad. But at the same time, he's going to have a lot of rings when it's all said and done.
Yeah, good for him, man. And I like him and Kawhi Leonard, I'm such big fans of, because they're just a breath of fresh air. They don't care about any of the crap that comes along with being a player. There's no drama, no nothing. They just go through life easy breezy, make their money, leave, go hang out, and Klay does well for himself off the court, from what I hear.
From what you hear. The rumor maybe,
yeah,
out there.
That's all.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Klay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
So everybody's making a big to-do about Nick Nurse getting his shoulders rubbed by Drake, and what do you do, and Drake's there, and we're tired of Drake the fanboy. Brady Quinn had a celebrity fanboy experience himself while in Las Vegas. And that celebrity, let's quickly go around the room quickly to see if anybody can guess the celebrity that really was happy to see Brady Quinn while in Las Vegas. All right, Roberto, our technical producer, we'll start with you. Take a guess. Vegas, who do you think it was?
No idea.
All right, good guess there, Roberto.
Roberto, throw up anyone. It could be anyone.
Thank you for taking part. Eddie Garcia, take a guess.
It's Carrot Top.
Okay, that's a very bizarre guess. Danny G, go ahead and take the guess.
Definitely Beyonce.
Okay. That's we do have a winner.
Celine Dion.
We do have a winner. Okay, there he is, Roberto. I thought you were going to go Blue Man Group. We do have a winner. Eddie Garcia was Carrot Top. Carrot Top was ecstatic to see Brady Quinn in Vegas.
Is he still all roided up?
Oh, yeah. He's jacked to the gills.
Okay, you have to understand, this was like before Uber existed, okay? So I had been out there, had a great weekend of fun, probably was out all night. And at one point, I don't know if I had lost something, I needed something, but I needed to like go to like the mall and like get some like basic clothes and stuff. And so I don't know if I was so hungover or the cab driver was bad, but my buddy and I pop out of the cab. And we just start walking because we couldn't be in there any longer. Next thing I know, pulls up a lime green Hummer, and this dude's yelling at me. He pulls off his beanie, and he's like, "It's me. It's Carrot Top." And I was like so hungover. I looked at him. I was like, "Yeah, I'm good, man." And I just kind of kept walking into the mall.
That's great. Couple of juice heads hanging out in Vegas. I love it.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
John Gruden is still talking because he really likes to talk.
Oh, is he talking about Derek Carr?
No, he's talking about Kyler Murray. You know, the guy that's not his quarterback.
Huh, okay.
Yeah, and how much they liked Kyler Murray. Now, it didn't mean they were going to trade up to try and take Kyler Murray. This was in a conversation he had with Peter King of NBC, talking about, you know, the draft and the approach to the draft, just looking at quarterbacks, so on and so forth. So, still talking about Kyler Murray, still giving him a ton of praise. He likes to compliment quarterbacks. I think he likes to compliment every single quarterback in the history of the NFL. That's what John Gruden does. What just in your knowledge of John Gruden, you know him, you've had conversations with him, you know Derek Carr, you know his game. For people that don't know, Brady Quinn is one of the best, all joking aside, one of the best in the business when it comes to breaking down the position of quarterback and sort of the details and the behind the scenes stuff that maybe people don't realize when this comes into play. What do you think John Gruden actually thinks of Derek Carr?
I think he thinks he's obviously good enough to be their franchise quarterback. Otherwise, they would have figured out a way of working out a trade, and he could have went in a different direction, either when he initially took the job or this past offseason. So, I think he wanted to give him a year to be able to, you know, get into his system and really, I think John Gruden himself wanted to kind of take a year to be able to look at this Raiders team and say, you know, what is the dysfunctional issues, right? What do we need to do in order to be the team that, you know, I think we can be when I was here previously, or, you know, to, you know, taking to a team to a Super Bowl level, like I did with the Tampa Bay Bucks. And so I think he needed that year to observe not only Derek Carr, but also the roster and the team to get an idea of that. This is the year, though, now where I think he now is going to figure out how he ultimately feels about Derek Carr. I think he liked him on the way in. I think after a year of working with him, he's probably got an idea of what he can do good and what he struggles with. And I think moving forward, he's going to put in game plans now that are really going to be, you know, tailored to Derek Carr's strengths. And if he doesn't have that big next year this year with the Raiders, I think they're going to be moving on, and I think they can do so financially if they just want to outright release him. There's not that big of a dead cap hit. If that was the case, this year they're on the hook for $27.5 million, which they're obviously not going to do anyway this late into the year. But after this year, that number lessens, and look, you still got a guy who's got NFL seasoning and experience. Other teams might view as a franchise quarterback, and is under contract, so you could trade him away and still get some decent compensation in exchange for him if they want to go that route. So either way, I think this is a huge year for John Gruden in determining ultimately how he feels about Derek Carr and really how the season goes between those two. I think there are some times where, look, there was some harsh criticism, you know, maybe from John Gruden, which he's been known to do.
Yeah.
And maybe they butted heads a little bit. This year's the year, though. If things don't go well, I can see it being a very frustrating long year for both parties.
And also, there's no more excuses. I mean, they went out and they got him Antonio Brown. They've added pieces around him.
Tyrell Williams.
He's being paid like a franchise. They upgraded the offensive line. He's being paid like a top-tier quarterback. Where do you have him? And we don't have to do the list or the rankings, but ballpark, where do you have him as an NFL quarterback amongst 32 starters?
Look, I think he's a franchise quarterback. You know, is he in the top 10? I don't think he's done that consistently enough to consider him that. Is he in the top half league, top 20? Yeah, he's definitely in that realm. But look, who knows, right? Because like I said before, much like John Gruden trying to figure out what were the deficiencies of this team last year in his first year coaching, yeah, I think a lot of what he saw in the past was when this team was operating on all cylinders offensively, good offensive line, good protection, good running game, or decent enough running game, Derek Carr put up some good numbers, and they were able to be successful. And when all those things started to fall apart, he struggled. And that's probably the reality for most quarterbacks in the NFL. You know, not everyone's Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers or Drew Brees. You know, they need some help. They need some things out around them. And to your point, he's got that now. And so that's where he's got to become that top 10 quarterback this year, I think, in order for John Gruden to feel confident or comfortable with him moving forward. Now, that being said, that wasn't the MO of Rich Gannon, who ended up winning the league MVP mm-hmm. when he brought him to Oakland. He made him into that MVP, or at least he was a big part of that, right? And then he won a Super Bowl with Brad Johnson. So when you think about it in the past, maybe he doesn't feel like he needs to get the most, you know, optimal play out of his quarterback in order to be able to make or win a Super Bowl, only because it's kind of in his past. But I think when John Gruden stepped away and he got back into the NFL, he's realized that this league has changed. And now more than ever, it's an offensive league. It's all about the quarterback. You got to be able to put up points. You got to be able to put up production. And you can't merely win by having a generational defense of sorts, because I think we both know this Raiders defense is still a long way away from being that.
Did they pay him too soon? Did Reggie McKenzie give him a contract too
soon?
No,
because actually now if you look at his numbers, it's not that astronomical of a number as far as what he's making, his average annual salary per year, what he's owed as compared to. Like, for example, would I take Derek Carr or Dak Prescott? I'd probably edge, maybe take Derek Carr. I mean, I just think his best from what I've seen as far as playing from the pocket and as a passer has been better than Dak Prescott. And so now overall, like, we'll see if maybe that narrative changes for Dak this year. But, you know, Dak's probably going to get a contract that's going to pay him like $30 million a year.
Yeah.
And Carr's getting like $22.5 this year.
Yeah, that is an interesting one. Who would you take, Derek Carr or Dak Prescott? That's... Because I think it's closer than people realize. Because we all assume
incredibly close.
We all assume that Derek Carr was sort of heading, and it was just going to continue to grow, and it was going to be linear. He was just going to continue to get better and better and better. And I do think that it's kind of last year was maybe a bit disappointing. The year before, I think that I assumed that he would be further along than he is, and now he's got a coaching change and he's got to learn a new offense. So to your point, I think it's a massive year for Derek Carr, because just because they didn't take a quarterback this year doesn't mean they weren't looking at quarterbacks. He acknowledged as much, and Mike Mayock said it at the time. We're going to look, we love Derek Carr, but if something comes along and we feel like it can make our organization better, we're going to look into that. And
which is the right thing for any general manager or head coach to say, right? If you can make your team better, you're going to risk all costs to try to upgrade at that position, in particular the quarterback position. I just think the whole most interesting part of all this is, for whatever reason, John Gruden's still talking about another quarterback besides his quarterback. It doesn't make any sense. Like, I think he's well aware that it's going to create buzz, or people are going to pick it up and write about it, and that's fine. But I don't understand the need for it. I think he also is aware that it's more motivation for Derek Carr, right? It's almost like bulletin board material from your own coach to motivate you to be the quarterback he's hoping you'll be. I'm not sure how to put it, but I just don't know why he's still talking about another quarterback and it's not Derek Carr.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
We are 100 days away, Brady Quinn. 100 days away until the start of the NFL season. Round of applause. The NFL just 100 days away, baby. 100 days away, which means Ezekiel Elliott will be arrested four times in that 100-day span. Is that what's going to happen? Four run-ins for Ezekiel Elliott?
He's good for one investigation every offseason, it seems like. Right?
Yeah. It's so the latest is Charles Robinson of Yahoo expects that the NFL is going to investigate the incident involving Ezekiel Elliott at the rave, where everybody gets together and drops ecstasy and throws up glow sticks and then paints with each other's vomit on the ground. I guess that's what you do at raves. I'm not really a rave guy.
Well, you miss one step. They eat the glow sticks at some point.
The eating of the glow sticks always fun. I heard at raves from time to time, like every 15 minutes, they draw straws, and whoever has the short straw, they have to go eat dinner out of one of the porta potties. It's a very bizarre behavior. What happens at raves? Just disgusting. It's a chili cook off with ecstasy is what it is, and bad music. That's really what a rave is. Ezekiel Elliott was at this rave and was hammered out of his mind. I don't need to see him take one of those roadside tests. Don't blow into a breathalyzer. Yeah, I know exactly what a hammered person looks like because I've been that hammered person many times. And Ezekiel Elliott was hammered, made contact with a security guard who threw himself over a guardrail like he was at WrestleMania 16. It was really amazing. It was really fun to watch. He got handcuffed. He was having an argument, it appeared, with the woman that he was there with, trying to stand in front of her so she couldn't walk because he was trying to have a conversation with her. A bad look for Ezekiel Elliott, especially a guy who, to your point earlier, is trying to get a big money contract from the Dallas Cowboys. And yet every single offseason, we've got another issue with Zeke.
That would be the contention, or that would be the point that I'd bring up to Zeke Elliott and his agent is, at what point do you mature and grow out of making these sorts of poor decisions, especially in public? And you're a repeat offender. So you have to understand it from the NFL standpoint. Of course, when there's video evidence and he's a repeat offender, they're going to have to investigate. And, you know, people may look at the video and say, well, there really wasn't much harm done, or it doesn't look as bad as some of the other things we've seen. But again, he's already been disciplined in the past. And so that's where you wouldn't necessarily be surprised if they didn't step in and do something, only because he's dealt with these issues before. But much like I said before, we've all got someone like this in our lives. We do. All have someone like this. I don't care if it's a family member or a friend, someone who can't control themselves, can't contain themselves. And, you know, like if you're going to one of these concerts and festivals, that's typically the person that you don't invite.
Yeah.
Because you're like, I don't have to deal with the drama. I don't want something to happen. And at some point, the people around Ezekiel Elliott, or maybe just Zeke, needs to understand he just can't do this. Like, he just can't put himself in that position anymore, because it seems like every offseason we're listening to something like this happen. There's an NFL investigation, and you brought up the point of the contract. This, to me, only delays it for another year, because if you look at the priorities between Dak, between Amari Cooper, and getting Zeke Elliott done, I mean, look, he's got 2 years left on his deal. They can push this off for another year, and now I think it gives them good reason to.
And look, you've brought this up before doing the show together, Brady Quinn, to where when you go into contract negotiations, and you've been through many of them in the NFL, they're looking for any reason to squeeze you on anything. And if they've got multiple times you've been on video bombed out of your mind with altercations involving security guards or grabbing a woman's breasts like you did in a video, if they've got that, tell me the Dallas Cowboys aren't bringing that up in negotiations with Zeke.
No, they're bringing it up. They're maybe even talking about, and one of the reasons why these negotiations go even longer is, you know, for this sort of conduct, they'll even have clauses where it'll negate or take away some of his guaranteed money, where if he gets in trouble like this and gets suspended. Because, you know, now instead of just talking about, you know, the length of the deal, the terms,
Leonard
guaranteed at signing and all that.
The Leonard Fournette situation.
Sure, yeah. Sure. And so they start to put in this other language now that would prohibit him from that. And that's the unfortunate part, is Zeke's got to understand he's in a position where he just can't afford to make these sorts of mistakes. He's still on his rookie deal. He hasn't gotten that huge money yet. And so he's only hurting himself when he puts himself in these positions.
Look, there he could very well be, and I don't know Ezekiel Elliott. I've never met him. I have no idea if he's a good guy, bad guy. I've never heard really bad things about him. I think he's a partier, and that's fine. He just may be a bad drunk. And I think that you can have both of those. You can be a good person, but be a bad drunk. You just maybe it just doesn't go well for you in public settings. Like you said, everybody's got somebody in their life. I mean, I know I have somebody in their life. I would never air him out on national radio, Marcus. But I just think that that somebody's got somebody in their life who's just a bad drunk. They get after it a little bit, and you just know when they're around, when they've got that stuff in their system, you got to be careful. Do you ever think, though, as an athlete, that you're kind of fortunate to not have been playing in this era of social media where everybody's got a camera?
Well, I kind of was born into that, though. So at the end of my college career, the camera phone came about. Like, do you remember the Razor phones?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that was really towards the end of college. And like going into your senior year, that was when I realized, I was like, oh, crap. We've got this thing called the Facebook. And I never really understood why anyone wanted to be a part of that. We had cameras on phones now. And so you realize that if someone wanted to sneak a shot, it was more than likely going to happen. And you couldn't really guard against it.
Yeah.
And so at that point, you really did start to realize that, man, you couldn't live the way you used to before, where you could go out and have fun and not worry about it. And I was never concerned about that because I conducted myself in a certain way. It was more because of just the image. You know, you can take a photo at different points in time and it can look a lot of different ways, you know, and especially if you're someone who's, you know, drinking and all that, people immediately assume if you're in a bar, you got a drink in your hand, you're drunk or you're partying. And that's not always the case. There's a lot of people. Well, there's a few people out there who probably go in just to have a drink and they're fine.
Yeah, I'm not one of them. If you see see a drink in front of me, I'm hammered. and I'll be upfront with you right now.
But so you get my point is that's unfortunately the era that a lot of these players are playing in, and no one's going to feel bad for them, right? Because these guys are making millions of dollars. Yeah. Okay. But the reality is, think if it was you and you couldn't go out and conduct yourself in a certain way and every little thing you did was going to be scrutinized. I'm sure you wouldn't appreciate it either.
Yeah. It's and I also think, man, and I'll be just upfront and honest about it because I have been honest about it. I mean, I can remember one time in Vegas being at Excalibur, at the Excalibur hotel. And
what?
Why? Because I don't have NFL money. That's why. What do you mean?
I was a
busboy at TGI Fridays. It was either Excalibur or Whiskey Pete's at State Line. What do you want from me? Stop busting my balls. Like, that's the best I could do, man. They had specials. And I remember, though.
I think you wanted to go there just so you'd have a story out of it.
No, I did not want this story, but I'm telling it on national radio. I remember going to the Excalibur after a whole night out. And next thing you know, I'm being woken up by the cleaning lady who's vacuuming right next to me. I had passed out at a slot machine. It's 6:30 in the morning. I've got four Bud Lights in front of me and the voucher sticking out of the machine, and it's got like $4 that I won on the voucher. Here's the worst part. My buddy tells me the next day, man, I'm walking through the casino. I see you passed out there. I'm like, oh my God, what is he doing? And I said, what are you doing? You just left me there? Like, you never thought, like, hey, let me carry my corpse of a friend up to the hotel, to the room that we paid for, so he doesn't have to sleep at the slot machine. If that was on camera back then, that's a bad look, but that actually happened. I didn't have to deal with it back then. So I do sort of feel a little bit sorry for some of today's athletes, or even celebrities for that matter, that are just trying to go out, do normal things. They have a bad night, like everybody's had a bad night drinking. It's caught on camera, and we see it on the outside and go, ooh, they're doing this, when we really don't know the backstory and what went into the night, and we're really not thinking about it honestly with how we were at that same age.
I think that's sometimes why you see, like, Jerry Jones, for example. He usually takes these things a little bit more lightly because, one, he remembers an age where he didn't have to worry about all that. Times are different, and I think it's it's maybe hard for him to relate sometimes in all this. And really just older generations in general. Yeah, I think they look at it a lot of times and think, gosh, could you imagine what would have happened when we were young, or, you know, how people used to settle arguments back then. We were at the Bottle Rock Festival. One of my uncle's buddies was there and he was talking. Now, granted, he's close to 50 now, but even then, like, he was kind of saying how, look, back then we were best friends. He's like, me and your uncle used to get in fist fights all the time. Then we'd be fine 5 minutes later. He's like, that's how we operate. It's how we settled things. And that's the crazy part now is the second you see any athlete like that get in a fight, especially even if it was with their buddy, we immediately think they're going to be going to jail, they should be suspended, they should be fined. And you're like, oh wait, these are two guys just horsing around who are friends with one another. There was no ill intent there. But again, a picture speaks a thousand words, and that's unfortunate. You know, it's unfortunate for players now. That's the burden that they have to live under.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.